Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen. This is part two of our interview with Stanford football coach David Shaw on leadership.
I'm curious how you approach challenging situations as a leader. So say maybe after a tough loss or a team you shouldn't have lost to, how you approach those situations.
I'm sorry, say that again. I couldn't hear you.
Oh, after a tough loss, how you approach just leadership and how you address your team.
So first of all, I'll just tell you what I've told the team multiple times, and it's well documented that I've been approached by NFL teams most postseasons. I've never given an interview. I've never talked to anybody. My agent has built a nice little wall around me that they talk to him, and he says thanks but no thanks. But what I tell him is, one of the biggest things that I've heard from these NFL franchises is what puts me on their radar are post-game press conferences after a loss. And to be able to handle that difficult situation, because first of all, you spent all week trying to find a way to win and you didn't win. Second of all, invariably something or multiple things went wrong that were out of your control, or they were in your control and you screwed them up. And then the third, and as important, that's when you get the best questions, right? That's when you get the worst questions, when you're in the worst mood. Half an hour after the game's over, you still feel the emotion, the pain, the distraught feeling, and you get one of those ridiculous questions. And my mentality for that is, first of all, publicly, is I don't care what they ask me. I know what I want to say. So I walk into those press conferences with things that I want to make sure that I say. And no matter what the question is, I'm not going to over-respond or overreact to the question. I'm going to respond in such a way that I know I'm going to get my message across to the media, to our recruits, to alumni, to whomever is paying attention, so that I walk into that not in a reactive state, but I walk into that situation in a proactive state. So I've already got my thoughts together. I know exactly what I want to say and how I want to say it. So no matter what they ask me, I have my responses ready. Now, as far as dealing with my team, first and foremost, I take responsibility on my own shoulder. Because that's where it should be. I don't like to go in there and say, hey, we just didn't do this right. Guys didn't block well, guys didn't run well, blah, blah, blah. I think before I ever point the finger at anybody else, I say, hey, you know what? Obviously I didn't do this right. You know, gosh, that third down call, I wish I had that one back. There in the second half, should have done X, Y, Z, which I think is a fine line sometimes, because you don't also want to say all of those things and leave it at that. So the players say, okay, well, you know, gosh, you don't know what you're doing. You screwed the whole game up. But there's something to be said for, hey, you know what? I'm in this with you all. You know, I think I can do this better. And what we need to do better as a team. So I think they need to hear both from us as coaches that, hey, here are the things that we could do better as a staff. Here are the things that we need to do better. Here are the things that actually led to us losing the game. I never mentioned the officials, and I never mentioned the other team. Hey, they played great. That's fine. They showed up to play great. Well, so did we. So who cares how many plays they made? Here are the things that we need to do. Right? You know, they completed 10 passes in a row. We got to find a way to disrupt the passing game. We got to get to the quarterback. We got to deflect some of these passes. Which needs to be tighter. You know, here are the things that we need to do in practice to make sure that we get better at this. So in times of difficulty, that's what our young people are looking for us, which is to take some responsibility, to give them some direction, to also some point during that post game, I like to leave a little light at the end of the tunnel where it's mentioned, hey, the next three games are at home, right? We got a chance to go back home and reestablish winning streak in these next three games, blah, blah, blah. So I always like to give them something slightly in the distance that we can get through this uncomfortable, murky time to say, okay, coach is right. You know, we got Washington coming in next week. That's going to be a big game. So to put them on the next thing that's coming so that we don't all just dwell, I don't think that's a positive thing.
I love this idea and how objective you are and bringing in some data, like, you know, this specific thing happened in the game. But I'm wondering, is this done like the next day or is this after the game? Because I'm just curious, like after a loss, your emotional state, if you're able to be that objective. Maybe you are.
Yeah, I usually am.
And that's impressive.
I've been teased periodically. I think mostly good natured, not all, but mostly good natured. And my sideline demeanor, I'm pretty calm. I'm pretty methodical. I'm pretty straightforward. I'm not very emotional. I'm periodically with the officials, but that's another story. And I think I'm very calculating. So I get a good idea of the things that go on during the course of the game. And like most coaches, a lot of the negative things stick in our craw. So after a game, I can usually rattle off the 3 to 5 things that could have helped turn the game back around in our favor. Whether it's, hey, it's only 2nd and longs. I mean, 2nd and 10, 2nd and 12, 2nd and 15. It's hard to be on offense if we're always behind the chains. So I think a good idea of the things that we could have done better. And some things come up after you watch the film that you don't know right off the hand. But typically, even after a loss, even after a win, sometimes they say, hey, we got to do this, and this better. Sometimes that's the best time to grab their attention on some things that we can do better. Gosh, we won by 7. Gosh, we could have won by 21 if we did this and this. And this is where we need to get better for next week. There's also something that I tell the guys periodically. And it's an interesting concept to grasp. Now, I was a social psychology major, but I loved philosophy. I took a couple of philosophy classes, and they've always stuck with me. And I heard something someone said a long time ago that was, I know, very philosophical. And for great competitors, I think the great competitors truly understand this. For me, it's this concept of great competitors and great winners, they treat victories and losses the same. They treat it the same. They're data points. Hey, I won, but gosh, I could have done this, and this better. And I won because this, and this. I got to continue to do those things. Hey, we lost. Gosh, you know what? Here are the good things that I did that I know I can do better. And these things. So every win or loss is something that happened. What can I take from it? So I think when you have that mentality, you keep yourself from the depths after a difficult loss and say, okay, great. Hey, this is what happened. If we're going to be worth the doggone this year, we're going to bounce back from this. We're going to have guys step up. We're going to have guys play better. You know, we're going to have to create some competition because, you know, so-and-so is not playing great and didn't play well. So, hey, no offense, but now you're going to be competing for playing time with this other guy. So whoever wins this competition is going to play. Because we need to do that so we can be better. I think understanding that losing a game is not always the worst thing. Sometimes it becomes a battle cry. And I'll even bring this up. One of the best reasons we went to the Rose Bowl the 2015 season, outside of Christian McCaffrey having an unbelievable video game type year, was the fact that we went to Northwestern and lost the first game, and we were horrendous on offense. Absolutely horrendous on offense. And it kind of became a rallying cry, a battle cry for us the entire year, where our guys were truly embarrassed. And we said, you know what, that can't be who we are. We can play so much better than that. And, you know, so we came back, we played a couple games at home and played well on the road. And our guys, I didn't have to say it. It's one of those things where the leadership starts to take over. And I heard the guys saying, like, hey, we're going on the road. We're not going to play like we did play at Northwestern. We're better than that. We're going to be a better road team. You know, and you hear that pride and that look like we are better. We have to. So I don't know that season ends up the way that it ended up with record guys breaking records, winning the conference, breaking Rose Bowl records. For me, it really started in that loss at Northwestern because we had the team responded, you know, the whole season. Up being a response to a negative situation. So not all losses are bad. Sometimes they end up driving you. And as I like to say, all successful people have scars, you know, so it's okay sometimes to get that scar as long as you learn from it and grow from it.
Lots of good stuff in there. I could definitely taking a lot of notes. This is great stuff. We have one more in leadership. Just wondering who some of the leaders are that you admire and who you've learned from. It's clear you have just a great model and foundation of leadership, and wondering who's inspired that.
Yeah, for me personally, there have been, I think, quite a few. Some that I've worked with, some that I haven't. I think when I was young, my dad was a football coach, so I always looked at football coaches. And I don't know if this is where I completely get it from. I can't say, but I loved Tom Landry, the Dallas Cowboys. Tom Landry seemed to always be in control. He was stoic. He was working with the offense, with the defense, working with the special teams, just kind of always seemed to be on top of everything. The players responded. They liked him. Some of them actually feared him. But there was that iconic, you know, gosh, that guy's got the team in the palm of his hands. You know, Chuck was like that. Yeah, the Pittsburgh Steelers. So for me, I always looked up to those guys that, yes, they won, but they won in a fashion to where it didn't seem like it was happenstance. It seemed like it was orchestrated. It seemed like they had great players, but they put them in position to be successful. So those are a lot of my earlier memories of coaches. You know, then my dad being a coach and watching him give speeches and talk to guys and the attention that he commanded. You know, he was Air Force and rose through the ranks very quickly and became kind of a leader in the military. I think that always carried through for him, that his words had gravity and he cared a lot about how his players, not just how they performed, but just how well they did their jobs. And it was important to him, and he drove them and he pushed them and he celebrated with them. At a young age, going to Western Washington and being at a small school, but winning the division the first year and going to the national championship the second year, and watching the head coach Rob Smith be a leader of that team and a pusher for that team. And, you know, I'm saying that, gosh, even a small arena that maybe we're not on national TV, but you can still perform at a high level. I always think about Brian Billick and my time with Brian Billick. He was my receivers coach at Stanford. My boss at the Baltimore Ravens, Brian was, as a head coach, he was the quote-unquote CEO head coach, where he took a great overall view. It wasn't just calling plays and coaching guys. He took a great organizational view. He helped them design a new building that the franchise was moving into. He cared a lot about the salary cap and how the team was being put together. So he delegated a lot of the X's and O's to the coaches, and he kind of stood above it a little bit, which I don't do necessarily as much because I like being a little bit more involved in the day-to-day offense, defense, special teams. But that was the way that he chose to do it, and he did it such a way that he was great at it. Jim Harbaugh, a difficult situation at Stanford where hadn't won a lot, and probably the most important thing that he could give the young men that we were coaching was confidence. Like, forget about what plays we call, forget about everything else. We're going to go into the game and we're going to go really, really hard and we're going to fight whoever shows up. You know, so that was a form of leadership, just to stoke the competition in each individual on our team. You know, you can't make guys that are not competitive make them competitive, but we could stoke whatever competitive fire was in them and recognize it and put those guys in those situations, knowing that we're not going to be a great team initially, but we're going to scrap and we're going to fight and we're going to try to build something on effort. So that was just kind of off the top of my head, all of those guys that have influenced me at different times during my career.
Those are good ones.
That is extensive and thorough. Now for a really heavy hitting question, Coach, what does a typical day look like for you?
Oh gosh, that's a tough one. You know, because in season, out of season, we're out of season right now. So for me, there are a bunch of different responsibilities. There are a bunch of different, you know, we'd have our recruiting meetings. So keeping up with what we're doing recruiting. I've got speaking engagements coming up in the spring that I go talk to some alumni. So for me, I try to find time during the day where I can steal away and do some football. So
You can just cancel those speaking engagements. They can listen to the podcast. I think
you're yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's, we just need to link out.
Yeah.
Just send the link out to everybody.
Yeah.
So for me, I still like to see my kids in the morning, especially during the off season. So I have three children. And I think it's important that they see my face in the morning, before they go to school. So I don't go in that early in the off season. But typically I try to get some things done. I try not to schedule anything for early in the morning so I can watch some film, make some notes, do some scheme evaluation, maybe a little recruiting, maybe some personnel stuff. And then usually there are going to be minimum three knocks on my door that I don't expect. So I just have to accept that and understand that. And whether it's to one of the coaches or the administrative staff or my boss, or it could, I just know that minimum there are going to be three times during the course of the day that someone unexpectedly is going to come into my office. So while I have time to work, I get as much done as I can. But as soon as somebody comes into my office with something positive or negative, they have to get my full attention. And until they walk out of my office. So that's a big thing for me. Hard thing for me in the off season is it's the best time to get in better shape. And it's, I force myself to get out. And once I get out, I take a jog around campus, and it's usually the best thing in the world for me, cause it's the best campus in the world to jog on. So to take a half hour, 5 minute loop, clear my head, get away a little bit, come back. And we usually have some kind of a meeting every other day, whether it's offense, defense, or special teams, or we're, doing recruiting. Knowing that that's going to factor in my day. But I like to come out of the day knowing that I got a few things done on my own personal list, as well as handling all the random things that do come up during the course of a day.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of wondering, is how you sort out the clutter, like getting pulled so many directions. So you're just kind of clear on, like, these things have to get done no matter what comes up. Is that how you stay, like, on task?
Yeah, pretty much. When I first started, I used to, before I left, I would have a list of the things that I want to accomplish the next morning. I think that was very helpful for me as I was becoming a head coach and trying to be as organized as possible. Because when you're a first-time head coach and you're early in your tenure, it's not going to be three knocks on the door. It's going to be 10 to 15.
Yeah.
And I would try to put down at least 10 things on that list, and I know each day I'd get through three. So after I crossed three off that I got done that night before I left the office, and try to reprioritize for the morning, knowing that, okay, here are the couple things I'm going to put up top to make sure I get done, but here are the other things that maybe aren't as pressing, but I would like to get done as well. So that's the thing for me, is just to try to be as organized as possible. Right now I don't make the list anymore. I have an idea of usually the things I want to get done But even without the list, every once in a while, I leave little post-its on my keyboard just to remind myself of something that may be a long-term thing that I want to get back on top of, or a couple of people I need to call back or email back. So I do leave some visuals for myself, but for the most part, hey, when I can get some quiet time, I churn away and try to get some work done.
All right. Time for a few listener questions. First one from Shane Scove. I feel like Shane might be fishing for a compliment here, but he was wondering if you could morph the qualities of 3X players, what would they be and who would they be?
Shane has never ever fished for a compliment in his life. And since he asked the question, I'll start with him. There's something to be said for competitive fire and the fire that affects people around you. And that's one thing that was just so great with Shane. It didn't matter who we're playing or where we're playing. During the course of the game, Shane is going to do something full speed and somebody's going to get hit hard. He just knew it. He's going to count on it. And our guys not just expected it, but when it happened, they still responded to it. And I always appreciate those guys that practice games, that do things that affect their teammates. And I think that was one thing that always there was there with Shane. I think for those that are great examples, and 3 years with Christian McCaffrey, even as a freshman, we could just say, do things like him. Like, I'm not going to tell you what to do, right? There's a great living example. Follow him. There's something to be said for those guys that show up every single day and do everything right and go full speed and still have humility and still care about their teammates. I mean, those guys are so rare. A lot of guys can do it most of the time, but those rare guys do it every single day. And that was Christian. Yeah, to the point where, you know, sometimes people would say, "Hey, coach, is that real?" And I would say, "Come back tomorrow. Come back tomorrow. You're going to see the same thing. This is just who he is, how he's built." And I appreciate that because that's hard. That's hard for all of us. That's hard for everybody to, you know, every single day be that same dependable, hardworking person that is real and honest and open and pushes himself and helps push his teammates. I appreciate humility, and there's no better example of humility than Andrew Luck. And we had a conversation early on, and I mean, we knew, some of us knew when we watched his film as a high school player, some of us knew a little bit when he came to camp, but the year he redshirted his freshman year, everybody on the field knew. He had a whole bunch of nicknames that were just, guys were in awe of him. And his second year at Stanford, when he became the starter, he would go in the huddle and kind of be very matter of fact. And I pulled him aside and said, "Hey, you know what?" I said, "That's your huddle." I said, "You got to go take control of that huddle." And he looked at me very honestly and he said, "Coach, I haven't played a game yet. I've got some fifth-year seniors in that huddle. Until I play a game, it's their huddle. I need to earn their respect." And it's kind of like, "Oh, well, by the way, I guess you're right. Sure, okay." But he had that. And he just knew he wanted field credibility. He didn't want to just say, "I'm going to take over because I'm the quarterback and I'm supposed to." He looked at those guys and said, "You guys have earned your stripes. And I'm not going to say more than I need to in this huddle until I earn my stripes." And once he earned his stripes, no question, it was his huddle. He would walk in, he would command their respect, and he would lean on his field credibility. And with every interview he ever given from the time he was in high school, he gets uncomfortable talking about himself. He wants to talk about the offensive line. He wants to talk about the receivers and tight ends and backs. He wants to talk about the defense and the ball back for the offense. He wants to talk about the special teams that set us up with field position. Like, that's what's like Christian. That's this guy every single day. He just believes that's the way it should be. That's the way he's most comfortable. His play makes him the center of attention, but doesn't yearn to be the center of attention. He wants to be part of something great, and he wants to play his role and other guys to play their roles. But when we have success and he has success, he's the first person to point to somebody else and say, hey, don't forget to give T.Y. Hilton some praise. He ran some great routes. He made some big-time catches. Hey, and I had time to throw the ball. Offensive line played so well today. They kept me clean. That's just how he is all the time. And that's a lot of times more often than being that vocal leader puts you in even more of a leadership role because you're deflecting the praise. I think the teammates appreciate that as much as anything.
Those are pretty sweet examples. It was nice of you to fit Shane in there. last question here. We got a listener question from Tavita Pritchard. And he was wondering how your upbringing as a coach's kid has informed your approach as a coach. And can it's just about your perspective for those of us who are parents and coaches at the same time.
Well, and David is a coach's kid himself. For me, it's a complex answer, and I'll try to give you the short version of my long answer.
Yeah.
For me, I think it's made me aware of a lot without making me callous. Maybe some of the things I may say may sound a little callous, but I'm just aware that I'm in a profession that is different, and I've seen it from young eyes. So I've been in the stands when people have booed my dad by name. I've been in the stands when we've lost games and people have shouted terrible things. I've been in the stands when we've won games and everyone wants my dad to be the next head coach someplace else. So like I've seen it from a young age at the different stages of this. So growing up in it, knowing that there are highs and lows, knowing that the fans' opinions are fickle at best, to say it nicely, and that I can't affect how I do what I do, can't affect what I believe, it can't affect what it can't affect ever the decisions that we make in our day to day. The fact that we had to move multiple times when I was growing up made me more aware that where I'm existing right now is not the only place in the world, that there are other people, other places doing other things. So I think it gave me an appreciation for different parts of the country. You know, born in San Diego, lived in Southern California, Northern California, Oregon, Arizona, Michigan, all before my senior year of school. Wow. So I was able to see a bunch of different parts of the country. And that has affected different coaches' kids in different ways. For me, it gave me an appreciation. It didn't make me resent the profession. I thought it was kind of cool. Now, it also was difficult to say hi and bye to friends. And that was one of the things I just accepted as a fact of my life. And I'm not going to be pen pals. I'm not a whole bunch of letters. We just moved. Hey, sorry, it was great knowing you. If we keep in touch, okay, great. If not, I understand, because now I have a life someplace else. And it allowed me to be present where I was and enjoy where I was, and without saying, hey, you know what, this is the only place I can live. We may move tomorrow. And I think that mentality, I think, helped me be accepting of the things that roll down my path. Because what you find out as a coach's kid or a coach's wife in this profession, you don't have a whole lot of sometimes in where you go. You go where the next job is. And hey, then we were in beautiful, sunny Arizona, and we, in the one-off season, we had to move to not so beautiful sunny Michigan in the winter. That was difficult, different world. But I've learned to appreciate it. We met great people in Michigan, great Midwestern state with all kinds of really cool things, and had snow days and snowball fights and sled races, and became a better basketball player because we played a lot more basketball. So I think I learned to appreciate where I was and take the things from there. But the biggest thing was being able to handle the things in life that are just rolled down the aisle to me, and do the best I could with what was given me.
Well, this was awesome. I think if the football stuff doesn't work out, we can find you a volleyball job. I think you're qualified based on our hour with you. So
I'd have a blast. And the hard for me is I don't want to spike everything until I get to spike everything. Well,
you'd be great. That's all you need to do.
That's how Sheenscope plays too. So. Well, I think you wrapped this up perfectly. I don't know if you meant to kind of take us onto the mountaintop there, but that was awesome. This interview's exceeded all hopes that we had, and I know I had pretty high hopes anyway, and you've crushed it. So thanks for your time. This is really just a joy to get a little slice of your world and your mind, and I know a lot of coaches around the world are going to appreciate and learn a ton from this.
Well, I appreciate the time, and it's great talking to all of you.
Awesome. Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, Coach.
All right. Thanks, guys.